You're listening to Am I the Bowlcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering ever made, full stop, and I haven't done any research. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza. With me, as always, is my producer and super genius, Morgan Sanchez. Yo. Hi, Morgan.
What's up,
what Mark, up, buddy?
Mike, who's here today?
Oh, how dare you? You are steadfast with the Mark thing. I've even taken it mostly out of my articles. I can't believe... Yeah, I stopped putting high mark, I think.
It's something for the OG listeners. There are people out there who appreciate this bit.
Mark Carbonza is my pseudonym.
Government name.
I couldn't tell if you had your mic on mute or not, so I was like, do you have it? Because you'll mute your mic sometimes. Anyway, Morgan, it's good to be back. It's been a minute since we've been able to do one of these because we're trying to be more current with our timing. Look at that. We're recording so close to when this comes out now.
The future past.
Can't say the same about the interviews. I mean, the phone call. I mean, the
nobody
thing.
Nobody knows.
Never
that.
Mind.
Yeah, that's off script.
Nobody knows. Yeah,
that was off script.
It's clear.
Ad-lib.
It's not. Yeah. It's
off
honestly,
script,
you know what?
Improv.
We did it. Yeah, it's not obvious to our listeners when we're still talking about Outlaws at Thunder Junction in the throes of Duskmourne. I'll tell you what. Anyway, welcome to Am I the Bowlcast, or welcome back to Am I the Bowlcast. You're listening to this show because you love Magic the Gathering, and or you love our guest, and or both. Very likely
or none
both,
of them.
I'll say.
No, you could just be creeping. You could just be listening in and see
creeping.
Who's on the phone. I would want to know
still
too.
Little weirdos creeping and stuff. I'll tell you what though, Morgan, before we get too deep into the episode, I do want to mention something. This podcast is brought to you by Bonebox Games. Our homies at Bonebox are sponsoring us this episode. Bonebox is a TCG accessories company founded by two friends and TCG enthusiasts, obviously, who are focused on creating the deck boxes, play mats, and dice they wanted to use as players. And so you can check up their current lineup of deck boxes, including I have the porcelain one right here. Beautiful white deck box with blue trim that I keep my Azorius clones deck in.
And you'll have also to got their latest... also note that these boxes are not made of actual bones, right?
No, that's true. You have,
okay.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. I
yes.
just, in case, I felt like somebody was probably listening and wondering, and I just wanted to get that out there, that it is bone box, but it is not a box made out of bones.
No bones. No bones in the box either. Well, I mean, look, if you collect some bones, I'm pretty sure
you could
fit
do that.
Bones in it.
Yeah.
If you're a dog and you're collecting bones, buddy, do I have treats for you. You put them in your bone box. Now, look, you can also get yourself a Decay. Decay is another bone box variant that you can check out. It's like perfect for your Slimefoot deck or whatever Golgari Death Reanimator deck.
I'll put my squirrels in there, dude.
Deck.
I don't even care.
Put your squirrels up. Yeah, of course you would. Yeah, your Decay deck, they've been tooling around with for like 6 months and they got it out and now it's out here. And guess what? You can visit boneboxgames.com. to check out not just their upcoming designs like the Fresh Baked Artist series or their new deck box, Bone Box 24, but you can also place a pre-order for Tarot, which is dropping on Halloween. I'm so stoked for this one. The images I've seen of this got a little bit of a sneak peek. Tell you what, look sick. They look sick. Am I building a Shil Gengar deck right now as we speak? Absolutely. Is it? Literally because I have an artist proof of Shil Gengar ready to go and a deck box with my eye on it. Absolutely. Aesthetic, baby. Can't wait for Tarot to drop on Halloween. And as a special deal for Am I the Bowlcast listeners, you can use the promo code BOWLCAST for 5% off your order. And it's limited to one use per customer. But if you get in there, promo code BOWLCAST, 5% off. If you're looking for gear with a backbone, look no further than Bone Box Games. Shout out to Evan and Jesse at Bonebox. Those dudes rule. I love whenever I catch them at a fest and or an event. They're always the best, and I can't wait to see what they're up to. Every time they announce a new thing, I'm like, man, I got to get my hands on that. And here they are sponsoring the podcast. So shout out Evan and Jesse. Thank you so much for sponsoring us here at Am I the Bowlcast. Speaking of big money, what a way to transition. We have another sponsor of this podcast, and then we'll get into talking about Magic beyond just sponsors. Mm-hmm. I've been getting hella packages lately because Duskmourne's been rolling out, and I slapped on the card sphere like, this is my favorite set of the year. I need to pick up hella singles, and they just keep coming.
So you like, you added the entire set and all of the variants to your wants list, right?
Honestly,
just like en masse,
not far off. Honestly, I picked up most of the rares. I'm even like, oh, the variation with the little guy behind
the double exposure
and cursor. No. The one with the creeping horror guy in the background.
Oh, the lurking variants, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The weirdo things. And I think they're pretty rad. Like sometimes, you know, sometimes they're not obvious and other times they really make the picture. So I really like them. Shout out to so many cool cards in the set. Shout out to Duskmourne. Just
shout out to Marvin.
Creepy little Marvin.
For being
the double exposure foil.
One of the coolest artifacts to be printed in recent memory. This will live forever in every artifact deck that I ever make. If I played the game. Sorry. If I don't know if I'll make a commander deck because I don't play the game. But if
Morgan
I did.
Morgan doesn't play Magic.
He'd be in here.
I'll tell you what, though. Marvin is an all-star in my Jolly Balloon Man deck that I am
brewing. Oh, my goodness. And that
I've got
art,
eight
though.
More cuts. Dude, tell me about it. Both versions, the double exposure and the regular. Anyway, I couldn't find any foils nearby. Was at my LGS, tried my hand at a couple packs because of pre-release and such. Couldn't get any of them there. Guess who had a foil copy of the Jolly Balloon Man ready to go? Cardsphere.com. Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm shilling for our ad partner. Yeah, they're sponsoring us. Cardsphere rules. All right, it does. I've been getting a ton of packages with a bunch of cards, and I am stoked on it. Every time there's a new set, people post up their bulk and the stuff that they don't want. And guess who grabs it up? I grab up foils of uncommons that I can't find anywhere. I grab little bulk rares that people don't want no more. And I also get some big ticket stuff. I got a Valgavoth for real cheap.
Yo.
Hell yeah. I also picked up a couple Metamorphosis Fanatics for much cheaper than they're going for now through Cardsphere. So shout out Cardsphere. Cardsphere.com. There's a referral link in the episode description. So you can check that out and sign up today. Use your cards as your wallet. It's a trading website, so you can trade your cards away and use that as money to buy your cards and trade them, trade for stuff, and they'll come right to your house, and it's awesome. It rules. You get packages from all over. I got two today, one from Honolulu and another from Connecticut, and I was like, that's literally both ends, right? Or wait, Maine would be the furthest east, wouldn't it? Or would it be Florida? I don't know the states so much. I am Canadian.
Hawaii's in the middle of the ocean, so
it's far. You know what?
It could
it's
be
both
anywhere
at the same time.
It could be both anywhere at the same time.
So that said, Cardsphere, get your cards here. Cardsphere.com, check them out. Morgan, how's your hunt for all the Odyssey block foils?
So
you're totally fine.
We're in different countries, so there's like a little bit of lag there.
There's a delay,
but different planets depending on if I'm traveling or not. Because sometimes I do go to California, but in terms of Odyssey stuff, I've actually picked up a ton of foil basics, and there is somebody who messaged me on Twitter who said that they have a foil Odyssey Island and that, hey, I learned that from the Bullcast. So felt very famous for a fleeting second and then said, okay, give it to me. So that's
very nice.
That's our progress on that.
I'm about it. If you have Odyssey block foils and you want to get rid of them, Morgan, we'll get at you on
big
card
dollars, speed. Big dollars,
big money, money, big money, money. Morgan. I think. We should probably listen hard for a phone call because we've been talking a lot off the top about who's sponsoring the show. Have we had much time to talk about Magic?
And somebody's been waiting so patiently.
Oh, have they?
Yes. They've.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, now I hear it. Did you just pipe that through my headphones?
That directly from my country to yours.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we should take the time and answer this call. We'll be right back. Let's see who's tallin'. On the other end of this line. Caller on the line. Who do we got today? Who we call in? What's the matter? What's happening? Who's on the line?
Hi. This is Mike Almond from The Social Contract. I'm glad that you finally listened to all of your Twitter mentions that said, you know what, this podcast needs more mics. We're not at our quota yet. So I've answered the call. Well, you've answered my call, but yes.
Exactly.
The call.
Morgan put the switchboard through to me and we're on it. It's happening.
It's here.
Mike from the EDH Social Contract over here.
Yeah.
You one half of the duo calling in.
Yeah, Lapper, who you're familiar with and my partner on the podcast, he was going to make it. We have decided to tell you that he isn't feeling well. He has to come on to another time, but really it's just to give me the opportunity to where if I'm absolutely the bad guy, the podcast as a whole still has plausible deniability. So very excited about that.
Okay. Well, at least if you're the bad guy,
he's still fine. In the clear. And that means that the podcast is and what we stand for is kind of in limbo, and that's okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's fine to have a little bit of a gray area here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I'm colorblind. No, everything's gray area. So this is great.
I'm also colorblind, isn't it?
Really? That? Yeah, we talked about this a little bit. Yeah?
Yeah. Just a tiny bit. Not enough that it, like, you know, takes away all color from me, but it's stuff where, like, my girlfriend and I were talking about colors in our bathroom, and I was like, so what, isn't this the same color? And she's like, no, they're like a couple shades different. I'm like, enough to notice for me? No, I can't.
When did you find out that you're colorblind?
My cousin and I were talking about it when we were kids. Like, my cousin was like, I'm colorblind. And I was like, oh, well, that sucks. I can't believe you're colorblind. And he was like, yeah, I can't tell the difference between, like, you know, he showed me what he had seen. He was like, I can't see the difference between these. And I was like, well, it's the same thing. And he was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, I had the experience of teachers thinking that I was very slow in school for a while.
Mm.
And then my friends actually figured out when I was like, I think like 11 years old, because they basically like got me a like color by number like thing. But and then they gave me a whole bunch of crayons and I did it fine. And then they did it again, but they took off all of the paper from the crayons, so I couldn't read anything. So I couldn't do the thing that I thought I wasn't doing. And then essentially I just looked at the paper and went, oh, okay. And then I wasn't slow anymore. So that was pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. They picked up on it from, this other thing that could be a possibility.
Parents, teachers, every kind of adult/guardian that had ever interact with me. Nah, Mike's just dumb. My friends figured it out before me or anyone else did. So get some good friends.
At least we had the same experience and people say Mike's just dumb a bunch. Yeah. I think that's a common thread between us.
And they still do that, but for like completely alternative reasons now, which
absolutely
is
absolutely different reasons. Yeah, for myself, I just like when there's like washed out colors, I can't tell the difference between them. Unless they're super saturated, I have such a difficult time telling the difference between colors. Like, it's not easy, but it's also like, hey, when the... There's a reason some of my favorite art and magic is the most vibrant, like the pop art, the pop art legends behind me here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, everybody got real excited about the Innistrad full art land cards, the black and white ones. And I'm like, this is, I hate to tell you guys, this is nothing. this is the same, but that's okay. I've never known the difference, so I don't know what I'm missing, so it's okay.
You ever have the urge to go out and get one of those, or somebody in your family ever told you, like, you know, I almost got you that pair of glasses?
I have received two pairs of those glasses in my lifetime, and I had to let them know. It's like, hey, for people like me, there's like a 20% chance this just straight up doesn't work. And for people like I hate to tell you, I don't think we're going to see any. So I just wore really expensive, uncomfortable glasses for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But you know,
totally.
It is what it is.
Those videos are always interesting. It's like you see the wonder on someone's face and you're like, oh man, I hope to see that, or like to give that to somebody. What a treat that must be. And then
that's what you say. What I say is I see their faces and they're very excited. And then the absolute fear and dread sets in of, oh no, what else have I missed? Is this the real world? Like it's literally like matrixing, you know, oh, I've woken up, but it's like crazy.
I had that. Like I said, we discussed the colors in the bathroom and I had that moment too, where I just like had a little bit of a, a tearful, like, I just don't know what else I'm missing. You know what I mean? So it is, it's interesting. Both of us mics, both of us varying degrees of color blindness. Both of us very into Magic the Gathering. You know, we do both of us. Well, I don't have a cap on now. You do. You're wearing a baseball cap.
I can take it off if that's the problem. Like,
there we go. Now we both don't have caps on.
Great,
oh, no,
great,
you got a cap on. You got a cap on?
No,
you got a
cap on? Now. Off? It's off now.
Okay.
Until,
how would I know? You're on the phone. You're calling us.
That's right. It's a video phone. We're living in the future now.
It is the future. We're living in the future. Now, tell our audience, because I've brought you guys up before, not just on our podcast, but
several
also on Howling Salt. Howling Salt Mine most recently. And so, most recently, this is coming out in November. So we're looking at like 6 months from now.
Sure.
But, I've talked about the social contract on here before. But I've never gone through. I don't know what the tagline is, or I don't know what the log line is. How do you describe your podcast to folks you try to get to listen?
So I'll tell you what we'll do. So we are the Social Contract and EDH podcast. Funnily enough, here we are on a Magic podcast. Weird how that works. The tagline itself that we kind of like, we don't really reference it ourselves very much, but our whole thing is like to win, love to play. And sometimes people listen to that and they go, oh, so they're not trying to win. Oh, no. Alex and I are hyper competitive. We're not CDH level of deck builders, but we like we get it and we understand like the ooh, this is really tuned and the, the all of that. It's awesome. What we're actually going after, you know, there's types of formats that we like to hit at, as far as themes and types of decks. We like to do a lot of group hug. I'd say. We'd call ourselves the premier group hug podcast, but that's only because when I search it on Google, I can't find another one.
Right.
So like
we're going to talk more in depth about this in a sec, but yes, absolutely.
But
when I think group hug podcast, it's you guys.
Yeah. But like group hugs, stacks, some chaos, group slug, politics, voting decks, stuff like that.
Voting decks are big.
Our whole thing is we have the most fun at the table individually and then got together to start the podcast collectively because we enjoy when everyone in the table can be involved in the game. Our goal is that everybody gets a chance to pop off. Everybody has their own turn at Arch Enemy. Everybody's deck gets to do the thing that they want to do. And then hopefully we win more times than, you know, the natural 25% we're aiming to win. But in the very least, there's absolutely been a game or two where I have lost because, well, I can win right now, but I'd rather see this thing do the thing because that's going to be hilarious. Oh, let's do that.
Totally. That's like the big philosophy for the way I like to play, too, which I've talked about on here several times. This is why we got along when I did your podcast so much was that, you know, sandbagging a counterspell to see like a 10-card combo do a thing.
Right.
That's way more entertaining to me than taking a win or like wiping the fun out of someone's hand. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that part's not for me, so I'm not like a blue mage counterspell guy, you know what I mean? But I know that's somebody's favorite play style out there, and I'm not trying to say that you're playing wrong, but I do think that the way you're describing it, which is I would love to see something interesting happen or let somebody have a moment, or you know, if we do this then this happens, and that's way cooler than just like this combo that's been resolved several times over. And again, it comes to this idea of the story, like of the game.
Yeah.
What's something memorable that might happen today? And I love that. I prefer that to most games that end up getting played, you know?
Yeah. I played Magic a long time ago when I was a kid and had what would now be considered a legacy deck that was actually pretty gross. And then stopped playing Magic. Graduated high school, graduated college, started working, and then started playing D&D with some friends in Washington when I moved out there for work. And they got me back into Magic because of Commander. And I feel like if you talk to somebody who plays Magic, that's maybe 50 to 75% of the people. It's like,
nowadays,
I played
it. Sure.
Yeah. And my first two decks that I played and actually bought from a friend, so I had something to start with, were a Niv-Mizzet the Fire Mine deck and a Talrand deck. And I'm the group hug enthusiast because I would do really cool stuff with Tower. Oh, look. Oh, yeah, no. Control deck. All the counter spells. But you know what's really funny? All right. You're casting a spell. I actually want to see it resolve, but I've got too many cards in my hand. So I'm going to counter your spell, but then I'm going to counter my own counter spell. I have two drakes. Continue on with your turn.
Oh, my God.
Stupid stuff.
That's
stupid
silly.
Stuff. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it was, oh, that's a problem. Nah, it's funnier to let this go through. Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
That's the fun part. It's like, I don't know, when we're about to see a play that's never been done before, at least one that I haven't seen resolved before, I'm like, I kind of want to see this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, let's see. There was this Varchild player at the LGS a couple weeks ago. I was playing my Taysa Opulent Oligarch deck. And it's Aristocrats with artifacts, and it's all at the same time, right? So you've got your Morbid Opportunist and Adir's Nightblade, both very important pieces to the deck.
Mm-hmm.
This Varchild player played some kind of, I think it's Blades of Vela's Veil. Up to two target creatures get +2/+0 and gain Changeling. And I was like, okay. And he goes and sacrifices his Varchild, so he gets control of all the survivors in play. And I'm like, well, I think I just got to let that happen.
Yeah.
Like, I think I got to let that happen. Did I have a sack outlet on board? Well, yeah, I could have saved one of them. Let's say I had one of those that you had to tap, but I was like, you know what? This is clever. Let's see what you do with these ones. And that was fun. That was a lot of fun. But it's a thing that I'd never seen before, and I'm like, I have to reward this in some way. I think it's just so cool. That's the fun stuff. That's what I play for.
I think Magic is like the ultimate form of show your work. Like, when you're talking about building a deck, you can build it in a whole bunch of different ways, but when it is, each deck is a aspect of you being creative on your own with the resources that you have, with what you want to do, with the opportunities that are available to you, and then taking that against three completely other different pieces of that same creativity, and then just interact. It's like, okay, show your work. Go
do it.
Present. And sometimes
I do
it's like
that.
I can you can cut it off and you can finish the game. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
But
I want to, but sometimes I just want to know, like, what's the end of your story?
Yeah, I showed up to the gallery. I want to see the finished product.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. We're all rooting for each other a little bit. I'm just also mostly rooting for me.
I do like that analogy a lot, because it also makes me feel like, thinking about it like this makes me feel less bad about the fact that I play just mostly just aristocrat sacrifice graveyard strategies. I have a lot of Rakdos decks. Rakdos is way more varied than most people think. But then again, it's like, you know, maybe I'm a painter and I paint with a lot of the same brushes. Okay. Yeah. It's just the same. Look, I have a style.
We're colorblind. Don't get mad at us because most of them look the same. To us, they look as different as they can. Exactly. No, I get that.
It is fun that my favorite color is purple, because at its richest, it's just black, basically.
It's just black with flair.
Oh, it's beautiful. It really is. Mike Almond of The Social Contract.
Hello.
You listened to our guest Kuro Hitsugi come on here and call in to Am I the Bullcast to talk about his pet peeve in Magic, which is group hug decks.
Yes.
And having just the week prior essentially been on your podcast to discuss group hug decks and their merits, I was also on my podcast talking about how annoying they could be.
Absolutely.
So, Let's talk a bit about group hug, and the floor is yours. I know we've been messaging for some time trying to make this happen.
Yeah,
we'll get Lapper to call in at some point and maybe use the same technique of being on the fence and keeping the podcast looking good. But
we'll see.
Now's your time.
So I've got my prompt, my Am I the Bullis? Ever since episode 9 of your podcast was released, I've been in a hyperbaric time chamber. I've done my working. I'm going to real quickly in front of the camera flip some papers as I have some notes.
I hope you guys can hear that.
But it doesn't matter.
It wasn't just a page. You flipped up a whole legal pad just like flopping. Yeah,
but only one page of it has anything on there. It's just scarier.
That's pretty funny.
So depending on how spicy you want to get here,
get spicy.
Okay. So am I the bolus for killing people with kindness? Subheading, a defensive group hug. Subtitle, if you hate playing group hug, I think you're a coward. Like, I just...
Be
all end all. Yeah, we can go into the tiers of Dante's Inferno here, but like, if you specifically hate playing against group hug, I think the reasons for it, kind of coward.
Okay, well, let's dissect this a little bit.
Now that said, I like Kuro and I like you, but yeah, we're going to get there. I'm dropping mics.
I mean, you are. You really are, because I think my position on group hug is that they can be fun. But absolutely. I'm with Kuro in that if you're not expecting a group hug deck at the table, or if it's all group hug decks, you know, all night, every pod's got a group hug deck,
sure,
then that's a very skewed experience. And that's not one that I'm stoked on. But I do like a group hug deck from time to time. Like, I'm not about to poo-poo the whole thing. But let's talk about you saying, am I the bolus for killing people with kindness? Subheading, defensive group hugs. Okay.
Yes.
Did you say in defense of group hug?
In defense, a defense. I mean, it does.
Okay. No.
Same.
I thought you said defensive group hug decks, as in like the group hug decks.
Oh no. Defense. This is a defensive group hugs. Yes.
I see. And now the claim that those who hate group hug are cowards. Let's back this up. Let's go through it. Mike Almond, you have the floor.
Okay. So let's start at the beginning here. Am I the bolus?
I'm moving my microphone away from me so I don't talk much.
Absolutely. Am I the bolus for killing people with kindness? I love group hug decks. And you said earlier, oh, I love the analogy. Good news, buddy, because that's most of how I talk. So I like to think of every game of EDH, every game that is competitive, all in all, it just boils down to a race, right? And here's all I'm doing right now. Let's say it's a 100-meter race. We're all trying to get to the finish, the win first. And we could do a whole bunch of things to try and be more competitive. We could do CEDH. We could do, you know, crazy cards and stuff like that. But in a casual format, your goal is to still end up winning before everybody else, or at least it should be. That's where I will agree with you, Kuro. Anybody else, this is the first part, the disclaimer. If you play a group hug deck, and your goal is not to win the game, I cannot claim you. Lapper cannot claim you. That is totally different. At that point, you're just playing
disclaimer.
At that point, you're just playing plain chase. And hey, that's still fun, but different. Okay. Like,
now we're going to have Amara calling back in to defend plain chase.
And here's the thing. I love plain chase. That's the point.
So do I.
If it's something that gets everybody involved and you're signing up for it, absolutely. Totally fine.
Yes.
I don't want to play group hug every time I sit down at the table, but I play a lot of group hug. And I think one of the misnomers is group hug, every card has to be a group hug card for it to be a group hug deck. Or if I have a deck that's a Voltron deck, but there's a couple of group hug cards in it, that means that it's a group hug deck. No, it's not. All of these things are interactive. If I have a counterspell, does that mean I have a stacks deck? No. It just means that they're different pieces. So all these pieces, goal is to win the race. Now, let's say we're sitting down at a table, Mike. Okay.
Yeah.
So me and you are two of the people trying to win this race. One of the other people is somebody who kind of knows the rules. It's been a long time, not familiar with as many of the cards that have come out. And let's say it's your grandpa. Okay, it's me, you, and your grandpa, okay?
My very old Italian grandpa who is still alive.
Yes, absolutely. And let's say the last person is really, really good. Like, they're playing a CEDH, even though they don't think they're playing CEDH, but they know they're playing CEDH, but they tell you they're not playing CEDH.
Mm.
Let's say that we're also sitting down with Usain Bolt. These are the four people that are sitting down at the table, okay? To win a race.
So wait, there's
magic.
Four. Hold on. Wait a second.
Yes.
There's four of us. So wait, it's us, Usain Bolt, and
And your grandpa.
Who's new to Oh, my grandpa is the guy who's new to magic. Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Now, I would say you and I, we have a decent idea on magic.
Right.
And translate into running to a race, me and you, we're going to be able to go pretty fast. We know what we're doing. We talk about this game in our off time, stuff like that. Your grandpa played a long time ago, used to be fast. Now,
okay,
maybe aged out a little bit, not so fast. And somebody else whose whole thing is, I'm going to win the game as fast as possible every time with as much efficiency as I possibly can. I am Olympic level of competitive for magic. Usain Bolt. Okay.
Okay.
So that's the metaphor. All I'm doing is I'm giving all of those people a car instead. Instead of running, instead of trying to do this stuff, I'm putting everybody in a car. Because what I want to do is I want to give everybody ample opportunity to be competitive. Because here's the second line.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I'm bracing myself for the second line.
Here's the thing. If I give everybody ample opportunity to win, and I am aware of this opportunity to win and what I'm going to do, I'm going to be better tuned to that actual atmosphere, to that actual deck. A lot of people like to talk about the fact that life is a resource. I like to talk about the fact that other players' hands and other people's lives and other people's board states are also a resource. Having a little bit of conversation and just amply showing, okay, what do we collectively think is the biggest threat on the table right now? Mm-hmm. Is a really good way of directing all the resources towards things that might not necessarily be you. So I have the ability here to say, okay, if I draw everybody three cards on a turn, you might think I have given your opponents 9 cards. And I think I have given 12 cards to take care of problems. I don't care if somebody else is ramping out a 12-12 that does a whole bunch of scary stuff on turn 5. If I also have given the entire table more collective resources to deal with said threat. The worst case scenario is somebody blows up my thing that is giving everybody extra resources. But that also means that they're likely going to make 2 other people at the table very upset because they did not get to take advantage. So I am now, just by giving things to the table, I'm going to try and make sure everybody has a good time, lets their deck pop off, do all of their cool stuff. I am giving all of the ample opportunity for you to have a good time. Now, what you do with that and how responsible you are with that and how much ire you draw at the table with these resources, you can obviously blame me because I've enabled it, but I've also enabled everything else. Kill me early if you want, but if you kill me early, you're still going to be left over with the everything else. And I'm also going to try and help and deal with those resources. All I'm saying is that Group Hug is just as much of a tempo deck as Stacks. It's just going the other direction. And I don't hear people complain about Stacks in a, I won't sit down and have anybody play Stacks with me. I don't like Stacks. Ooh, buddy.
You should be in my email box for the column because yeah, they're out there. A lot of people don't want to touch Stacks at all.
A lot of people don't want to touch Stacks, and I don't want to play Stacks, but I am absolutely not going to sit down at a table, have a rule zero conversation, which frankly, I think the real issue is that people don't know how to rule zero very well. But if you sit down, you have a rule zero conversation and, oh, I'm playing a Stacks deck. At no point, just with that information alone, would I go, oh, I don't want to play with you.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm at. If it's just being completely against a deck type, well, there's a lot of different types of group hug, as we've already discovered. There are the group hug decks that are good, and then there are the group hug decks that don't try and win the game. Well, those are 2 different types of decks.
Two of many others as well. Let's not forget. Yeah. I forget who it was. I think Kuro himself brought up the Mono Blue Braids deck that.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
And here's the point being that, like, oh, they played a group hug Braids deck, the blue Braids deck, but they waited until It was way late in the game.
The right time. Yeah.
For them to get the extra use out of it, which, like, hey, if you're playing a group hug deck and you're not getting an advantage off of the ability to give everybody more stuff, that's a bad group hug deck. That's just a bad deck. If you're not getting an advantage by doing the thing your deck wants to do, bad. I don't care what kind of thing it is.
Right. It's a deck that needs a little bit more time in the dojo. You know what I mean? Like, get open up training mode.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So yeah, that's, that's the
I've been
starting.
Playing Guilty Gear.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. How recently?
Oh, just got into it. It's been fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got it, and I'm like, I don't know how to play many of the characters I actually like, you know? I think Bedman's a lot of fun, but I have no idea how to use them.
I couldn't get into, like, the competitive, like, fighting games or, the only one that I got into at all was, like, Smash, and I had the same kind of problem that you just instanced, where it's, like, the characters that I wanted to be good with, I was terrible.
Exactly.
But then, like, Mr. Game & Watch, I was awesome, and it's like, okay, well, if I really lean into the hilarity, like, this is pretty good, but, like, I'm lame. I want to be Cloud. Come on. But
I mean, that's the thing is, I agree. It's, for me, it's, like, I enjoy the creativity of a fighting game where they're like, what's this guy's gimmick? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's the fun part for me, is like learning all that stuff. But the ones that I gravitate towards are definitely not competitive, or they're like, you know, a nostalgia hit. Like, I've been playing a lot of Mortal Kombat 1 as well. Mm-hmm. And when that game came out, I was all about Smoke, you know, and that's a character that I think is like speedy and flashy, but his damage output isn't great. You have to be really good with him to be competitive, but I'm not about to be super competitive for myself. You know,
the investment that you'd have to throw in to get to that point, it's not where you're at.
Yeah. And meanwhile, like, you know, you're looking at the tournaments right now, and it's like, oh, Peacemaker's doing great. People love this DLC guy. Mm. And I just don't care. You know what I mean? I don't want to play that to be competitive. I want to play something else. And I kind of like, when Mortal Kombat 10 came out, I was all about Pharah Tor, which arguably is the worst character in the game. Mm-hmm. But I like the big guy, little guy energy, and I thought that was fun. And I think that this digression also speaks to the way we both kind of approach Magic, which is like, we like what we like.
Yeah.
We're not making any apology for that.
Absolutely.
And the way that we like this stuff means that, like, we've taken our time with the concept of the stuff we like.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to know the tools really well.
Yeah.
So for instance, if somebody were to message me like, Mike, I'm having trouble cracking the sacrifice deck. You know, I don't know what tools I need or things that are missing. Can you take a look at my list? I will totally look at that list and be able to be like, well, you've got this and this, and this is a trap. You know, like, this one, not as good as you think it's going to be. We're dealing with volume rather than recurring. This says token. This is non-token. You know, all that stuff. That's my wheelhouse. I can help
you
with
that.
You
can full on thesis paper.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
What do you need to look at? I've got you. I'm an expert. Yes.
And so before I don't think we're going to go right to Morgan right now, because I think we're touching on something interesting here, which is, you make the distinction between good and bad group hug decks. You're talking about different kinds of group hug decks that rely on politics, others that rely on like expert piloting, others that kind of play themselves, but then have like, you know, that treacherous terrain, price of progress kind of thing, you know, and then you've got bad group hugs. What cards would you say, if you can give us like the ones that come right to mind, what cards would you say are quintessential good group hug?
Okay.
And cards that maybe you think people might need to play more of for them to be able to play their group hug better.
So I'm going to answer that, I promise. But
get it.
Let's kind of go into that, because when you're talking about different types of group hug decks and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm defensive, obviously. I'm leaning down. I'm calming down. My shoulders are lower. But that said, I've done a lot of the defending of the archetype of group hug. And it's funny because I've only heard the same complaints, but they feel like they fly in the face of each other. I was literally on a CMDR Central at one point, and the three people that said, well, this is my issue with group hug, they each gave me, it doesn't
Here
win.
Come the notes.
It doesn't win. It's too strong.
Oh.
And it helps my opponents get scary. And I went, well, hold on. Two of those are right in the face of each other. So the two of you have a completely different view on why you don't like it. You came to the same conclusion, but your work is very different. That's okay. It's fine. I feel like you played two different decks.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes my opponent scarier. Well, did it make your opponent scarier, or did it give a symmetrical effect to the table that your deck wasn't able to take advantage of the same that other decks were? You've got a Turgrid deck, I believe, that only cares about the discard portion, right?
No, I've got an Anya Falconwrath deck that I play. I play Turgrid in that deck as I only accept.
But it's a discard. Yes, that's where
everybody discard. It's a symmetrical discard deck. Everybody discards.
And here's the thing. I'd love to play a group hug deck against that, because if I'm discarding if I'm discarding group hug cards and you're taking them, good. This hasn't affected me at all. I'm in great shape and more good stuff is happening. So my group hug cards that I care about are the ones where when they're out, I'm going to get the effect regardless and it's going to benefit me. Or it is an effect that I know that it's only going to be of benefit to the people who truly need it right now. My big one that I always go to is Oath of Leges. So this is this is generic and a white for an enchantment with a lot of really, really long words because it's an older card. But here's what it boils down to.
It's templated as it's an old card from like Exodus, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be. I'm picturing the bridge. It's Exodus. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and a while
has
back.
It been eroded? It hasn't really.
It hasn't been eroded, but Scryfall has cleaned it up. And even in cleaning it up, it's still a whole lot of words. I can make it a lot shorter at the beginning. Go ahead. Bring it up.
I've got it pulled up. So one in a white. For an enchantment from Exodus, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player chooses target player who controls more lands than they do and is their opponent. The first player may search their library for a basic land and put that onto the battlefield, then shuffle.
So, dialing all of that in, that card says, at the beginning of your upkeep, if another player has more lands than you, go get a basic, put it on the battlefield untapped.
Easy peasy.
Right? Yep. That is a mono white ramp piece that ramps your opponents as well, as long as they don't have the most. So the only time it hurts you to play this spell is if you have the most lands. And even then, that's fine. maybe I want people to have a lot of lands onto the battlefield because it's a land matters for everybody else deck. Maybe it's not. But that's a 2-mana enchantment that. How many people are going to remove that? Who's going to give up a card to get rid of the thing that gives some people some land sometime?
I mean, if somebody found a way to game it, I could see them spending mana on this, but not really, especially since it's a basic land to play and people are playing, I'm going to be honest, too few basic lands these days.
That's one of my favorite things about playing group hug and 4 or 5 color decks. The amount of basics that I play compared to everybody else is obscene. Because the amount of times that I'm like, all right, everybody can go search for up to 15 basics. Oh, you're going to get 3? Okay, great. Uh-oh. I'm going to get my 15.
Yeah, I just played New Frontier for X equals 14. Everybody enjoy.
Yep. Have a great time. Oh, you only got 3.
My veteran explorer died.
I love that thing so much. There is nothing more fun than recurring a veteran explorer like 6 times on your turn. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's dead. All right, it's back. Oh, it's dead. It's back. And just going through your deck.
I do run a lot more basics in my Mike and Will deck, and I think Veteran Explorer might be the replacement for Solemn or Steve, because a lot of other decks can't take advantage of the fact that it's all these basics.
Right, and hey, I absolutely get it that if you're playing a deck where you're really, really trying to control the tempo, or you're trying to grind out a win or something like that. And by the way, I don't have a problem with that even a little bit because I'm 36 year old. It took me a while, but I don't want to be a hypocrite. But the premise of, okay, I don't want to play against this thing that completely goes in the face of the deck that I'm trying to play. Totally get that. At the same time, I don't want to play against any edict decks if I'm playing Voltron, because that's going to be really hard for me to be able to do the thing. I don't want to play against I don't want to play
a Rest in Peace deck. If I'm doing
Graveyard, I don't want to play tokens. If I'm playing against somebody who's got a whole bunch of tax for attacks effects, stuff like that. And I'll be honest, the real reason that I wanted to get into group hug and I wanted to do these kind of, you know, rites of flourishing and dictate a crew fix and all these things that, hey, I want to give everybody as much opportunity that I want to do. A, I'm battle cruisery as heck. I want to see and want to do the biggest, most obnoxious things. That's hard
to do.
We're
on the same page with that. Sure.
But the only thing that I think is worse than losing a game way too early, out of nowhere, crazy enabled somebody to go way off and I wasn't able to control it. Nobody had the answer in hand. And all right, well, I guess that's 30 minutes of our lives. Let's shuffle up and start again. The only thing worse than that is an hour and a half, 2 hour game where one person got to make one play the entire game because their starting hand, they had their soul ring, they had their one lander, and then they're just waiting.
Got greedy. Sure.
Yeah. So you know what? Hey, here, have some stuff. Have some stuff. We're going to enable the storytelling to actually happen and facilitate it, because the worst case scenario, somebody loses or somebody wins. Okay. Let's shuffle up and play again. Like it's have the conversation. Yeah. Hey, is the game over? Okay, cool. We don't have to play this out. Let's get the next game going. That's fine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a couple of cards that you, so let's see what are like name. Give me three group hug staples of which you think are the not end all of group hug, but when it comes to group hug, give me your Mount Rushmore. How many heads on Mount Rushmore? Four, five?
Four. I'll tell you this. We did a group hug power 9, which was most fun. Underpowered group 9 that I can think of. But Alurin, and by the way, that's Alurin. The first time I've gotten that card name correct on the first try.
Okay.
I have a speech impediment of just being too excited to talk about the card, and then I just say it in the letters as opposed to what they actually all combine to say. So Alurin, as I call it mostly on the podcast, but Alurin.
Tight. Alurin.
Super awesome enchantment where it's something that nowadays it's in two lane decks. It's almost an auto require because the whole thing is that you play.
Jeez. Yeah.
You play, you know, low cost mana creatures for free, essentially. And that's cool. But the one that I like with that is Vernal Equinox, a group hug card, where for 3 and a green, it's an enchantment. All players may cast creatures and enchantments as though they had flash. So if I'm in an enchantress deck with group hug effects, I want this, because even if other people can take advantage of it, I'm likely to take more advantage of it.
Because you've built for it.
Because I built for it. Along the same lines, Awakening. People get very scared at Seedborn Muse. Awakening is, I would like to give Seedborn Muse to the table. At the beginning of each upkeep, all players untap all creatures and all lands.
Pretty solid.
Pretty solid, right? So if I'm playing something that does a whole lot of stuff with tapping on my turn and other turns, I have the ability to take advantage of it, then I'm absolutely going to take advantage of it.
Man, you know what? Awakening might just be perfect for my Mike and Will deck. I think this conversation has changed up two cards in that deck for me, because I've been having trouble with people killing my White Plume Adventurer, and I can't imagine them doing that to Awakening.
Right. And here's the thing. All group hug cards, Alex is the one who really turned me on to this idea. Wizards of the Coast, especially in the past, before Commander was a big big buck of their format, cards that were symmetrical effects are either extremely cheap as far as actual real life money, or they are extremely cheap as far as actual mana cost, because it's considered a negative to give other people these effects. I'm sorry. Yes, Mirari's Wake is a very good card, and it's a very scary card to see played. Mm-hmm. How about I play Heartbeat of Spring? I'm going to save 2 mana on it, and everybody's going to have that mana advantage. But I'm the one who's aware that it's going to be played. The amount of choice paralysis that people can get because, I had my next 3 turns planned out, but now I'm drawing 2 more cards and my mana is doubled. okay, hold on, I have to redo this. And they have to redo this.
Rethink my turn, sure.
And that means that, hey, great, you go ahead and do that. I know what I'm going to do now.
Yeah.
And that's okay, too. Yeah. That's a competitive advantage. I'd love to tell you that all of the group hug just comes from graciousness. It comes from everybody, just kumbaya. I'm literally wearing a Mr. Rogers shirt that says good vibes, all of that stuff.
You are?
But like, at the same time, I play group hug because it is the most efficient way for me to do battle cruiser nonsense without feeling like I'm just a CEDH deck. I'm enabling everybody, but I'm doing cool stuff. You're doing cool stuff too, but I know my cool stuff.
Yeah. I do think that there's the defense of group hug on this can be boiled down to it's a competitive advantage and not just willy-nilly everybody. It's not like a hey, we're just giving everybody everything. It still serves me. And I think that's something that we have to bear in mind when we're talking about group hug ever in the future. I'll say again, I agree with Kuro in that if it's every game that there's a group hug deck,
100%.
I'm less interested in that. Especially if somebody in your play group happens to break it out every time, that'll warp your deck building.
For sure.
That's for sure. But that said, definitely an excellent defense. Well done, Michael Almond of the Social Contract. So am I the bolus for killing them with kindness, a defensive group hug? Let's discuss this on the other side of this call. Michael, anything you would like to leave our listeners with? Online social handles, any...
Oh, boy.
You already know about the Social Contract and EDH podcast, where you can listen wherever you find your podcast. Anywhere you'd like to direct folks?
Well, I'll tell you what. Lap isn't here, so I'm happy to help him and his project, a big one. Commander Spellbook. He's a part of the hey, how many combos exist? All of them. Great. Here they are. So you can go there. You can put in your deck list to figure out combos that already exist, combos you could have, etc., to do really cool, crazy stuff.
One of my favorite things to do is lurk on the Commander Spellbook Discord when new cards are spoiled. When new cards get previewed, it's like that time of year. Well, several times a year now with the frequency of sets, but you find a real heater in like the commons and uncommon dump at the end of the set. And you're like, hold on a second, this enables how many?
Right.
And you head over to the Commander Spellbook Discord and it's just nonstop for a while. It's people being like, okay, has this one been submitted yet? We're submitting more and more. Like Forsaken Miner is a ridiculous one, for example.
Reflections of Lithara or something like that, where it's an uncommon enchantment that's like, oh, this is in 10% of all combos in Magic. It's just like, all right, cool.
Reflections of Lithara is the rare one that choose a creature type and it creates a double.
I always mix that up. There's some blue enchantment where whenever a creature enters play, you can choose one of two things, and one of them is like untap or tap something.
Oh, retreat. Retreat to Hagra.
Yes. I don't know why.
Retreat to Coralheim.
Coralheim. Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
See, this is
Hagra's. Retreat to Hagra is the landfall one that drains opponents, which is more my speed.
See, I don't play a lot of combo. Combo is a good way to not see the battlecruisery stuff, so I don't do it as much as I should.
Fair, but I mean that does give us the end of the call here. Thank you for calling in, Michael. Everybody check out the Social Contract. We're going to check in with Morgan on the other side and decide whether or not Michael Almond of the Social Contract is the bolus. I'll tell you what, I've been waiting for that call ever since we had Kuro Hitsuki on the podcast. Michael Almond of the Social Contract, an EDH podcast. Please and thank you very, very much for calling in and chatting about your love of group hug after Kuro espoused his disdain for it. What an episode to be talking about. I know it feels like, hey, we're platforming two differing opinions. What are we, a couple of centrists? Are we a bunch of hypocrites? No, we're trying to tell you that there's more than one way to enjoy a game. And we're all individuals. So heads up, everybody. Guess what? We're human beings. We're here to be fun and not be perfect. But, you know, if something sucks, I think we can all agree that it sucks. You know, even Michael was saying that Kuroho brought up some good points, and even Kuroho brought up the Braids deck that he quite liked. So, all that to say, nobody hates Grouphug fully, and nobody fully loves Grouphug. Oh my god, what's the problem? What am I doing?
I really think, so the only time I like Grouphug is when the commander is cute. And thankfully, we got a recent addition to the cute roster of Grouphug commanders in Mrs. Bumbleflower, who happens to just be a good Grouphug commander in general, and also very cute. She comes with like some snacks, so hopefully, you know, your opponent is like, hey, I got like some hard candies or cupcakes or something, and then, you know, it's just gonna, she's just gonna start going off.
I don't know if I would call Miss Bumbleflower a Grouphug commander. That is just a scary commander with a nice cute looking card. That's a scary, scary commander. Give her fangs, then what?
Then she's Benicula.
Okay, I wish I knew some references sometimes. Who's Benicula?
So, this is like a really awkward thing to explain suddenly to somebody, because Benicula is a vampire rabbit.
Oh, is children's this from story Monty Python?
For children? Oh, no. It's very, okay, like real children's fiction. It gave me nightmares and also made me afraid of rabbits for a couple of years.
Oh, okay, I'm looking it up, and yeah, I get why.
It's not, okay, not cute. She's not, it's not, no, yeah. But okay, that's not Miss Bumbleflower.
No, it's not. So that said, we should take it to a vote immediately to talk about whether or not.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about the voting system. Let's explain the vote breakdown.
Ooh, I really don't know how many more times I can make this simpler for anyone to understand who's new, but this is like really rough too, because
yeah,
you know, we're kind of like poking math in the butt here by doing it this way.
Yeah.
Okay, because
yeah,
Solani's not here. So what happens is things get a little crunchy when it comes to
it
the math.
It does get a little crunchy.
And that means that my vote, this is where it starts, you guys. This is where I start to explain it. But my vote counts for one. And then Kuroza's vote counts for three.
Still. There we go. Okay, so we're voting. All right. So, Morgan, what do you think? Is Michael Almond the bolus for killing his opponents with kindness? Loving Grouphug? In all its good and bad iterations?
You know, I really wish that we got these prompts before the call, so that I had some time to kind of formulate my opinion.
I will say,
if you put me on the spot and say, is he the bolus for killing his opponents with kindness? I think contextually, right?
Oh my god.
Stealing something from a colleague of mine. Contextually, mm-hmm, Michael is not the bolus for killing his opponents with kindness, because he has the reprieve of saying that he wants the games to be good. You want to get value out of something when you're playing Grouphug. Yes, you're not just kind of doing it to toy with people, and like it's like you're juggling a bunch of balls and you're never really like throwing them at anybody, mm-hmm, is the way that it is to me. I can appreciate a good tempo-y deck or mid-rangey deck that lets you do things multiple different ways. But if you're not like trying to win, you're just trying to stay in the game, it's a little frustrating.
I see. Okay. But what if, so Michael did say specifically that he and Alex like to build decks that want to win. They just make it so other people can rise to a challenge or have less non-games.
And so that's why he's not the bolus.
Vote for not the bolus. I see. I'm going to go ahead and say, I think Grouphug, I think I'm with Kuro in that my knee-jerk reaction to a Grouphug deck at the table is, oh boy, here we go. It's not an immediate, like, I'm excited for it. I have to be in the right space for it. I have to be excited for a Grouphug deck, or like expecting one, or, you know, prepped for one. Not that it's like, oh, it's an immediate, let's sit down, it's time for a Grouphug deck. I like to know it's coming, and I like to know that the people at the table know what to expect out of a Grouphug deck. When it's the whole night, no thank you. When it's one or two games, it could
be
fun.
Nobody likes Dirtletown.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, sometimes you accelerate so many decks too fast. Like, some decks are, like, you know, luckily with Mana Crypt and Dockside and Jailogon, I mean, we didn't even talk about that. You got a lot less decks that are going to pop off as fast as they have been. Like, people love to say, well, Darkside, it was printed in a pre-con, it was so casual. It's like, no. No. Dockside, warped every game. My point is, Group Hug is an interesting strategy that can be and is often leveraged in the late game, which means that it's hoping for, to an extent, a bit more battlecruisy magic and having more stuff happen. And I think I'm into that. I am into that. However, it depends on the group. It depends on how they leverage it and what decks are being sped up.
The social contract, even.
There we go. Yes, it's important to discuss the social contract. I will say that I don't think Michael Almond is the bolus here. I will say that just like anybody else, my reaction to Group Hug will go day to day. Some days I'll wake up and be like, I feel like playing against some Group Hug decks, or maybe I want to play a Group Hug deck. Other times I'll be like, yeah, I think I'll sit this one out. Or the thought of a Group Hug deck makes me so mad, you know? So anyway, that said, thank you so much for calling in, Michael. Everybody check out the Social Contract, an EDH podcast that he hosts with Alex Lapper of the Commander Spellbook, which you heard about at the end of this chat. And Morgan, I think we got to address something here. First, let's talk about a shout out that you want to do real quick.
Yes. So recently we, Space Cow Media, the company that has wonderful websites like EDH Rec, Architect, and Cardsphere.com, acquired a website called Cardgamer.com. So you get stuff that is not just Magic related, but is related to all kinds of card games. And this is stuff that comes from like Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories to Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. And I want to just get a shout out there for anybody listening. If you're a Hearthstone player, or you play Arena, or you play Pokemon, or you play Yu-Gi-Oh!, we are hiring. I want to pay you money to write words for words on the screen about the game. So give me a shout.
For Card Gamer, baby. And among those sites is also CommandersHerald.com, which is the website that I write for, that the namesake of this podcast is from. My column, Am I the Bolus, over at CommandersHerald.com, has been running since the site has been running. So check that out if you want to read more of the podcast, essentially. And also, a fun thing that I got to do in the spirit of Halloween is with permission from Dan Sheehan over at Pie Break Pod, I have broken down all the characters in Saw and assigned a color identity to them. So if you're not familiar with Pie Break, the podcast that Dan Sheehan does, you should check it out. Break down a topic and then goes through aspects of the topic, in this case, characters from a movie, other times ingredients in a thing, you know, something along those lines, and assigns a color identity to them. I've done the show a handful of times, and I think every episode I've done has been good, but I'm biased. And I think you should check it out. And also check out my article on CommandersHerald.com, where I go through all the Saw characters and give them a color identity. Part one is up now, and part two should be coming up this week. I believe it should be coming up Thursday. Anyway, check it out. Keep an eye out on CommandersHerald.com. And if you haven't read last week's, go ahead and check that out immediately. It would make me very happy. I spent too much time on it. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you dig the Saw franchise enough to get something out of it. And if not, I hope one day I get to ask to create a Commander product for the Saw franchise. Now, elephant in the room time before we sign off and get out of here. You may have noticed Michael Solani is not on the episode. And that's because Michael Solani, unfortunately, is no longer part of the podcast. He's part of the history of the podcast. He might come back as a guest, even. There's no bad blood. We love Michael. It's just kind of like there's a couple changes coming to the podcast. And that is, I couldn't sustain the way we were doing the podcast before, which required scheduling among three people to get us to bookend recorded conversations from months ago. And essentially, for the time being, considering the backlog that we do have, Morgan's schedule is a lot easier to work with because she works with Space Cow Media directly, and that can fit in her schedule easier than, say, you know, Solani.
I'm doing this against my will. Someone help.
Exactly. You're being paid by a corporation to be my friend. My point is, it makes it a lot easier for me to be able to schedule stuff like the podcast and comedy, and to schedule around my online appearances where I appear on streams. Like, yeah, the day this comes out, I'm going to be on Chat Chaos on Mr. Bever's stream. And then next week, I'm going to be doing Alan's stream at Mental Misplay. So I, you know, I get to schedule things a little bit easier and boost ourselves that way. And then on top of it, it means that the transition into the next step is a little bit easier to handle, because the podcast as it is not going to be what the podcast is. I think the idea is that we're toying with a change in style. Is there a chance that it just becomes me interviewing the guests and we just do it an interview show where I vote on whether or not they're the bolus and we just keep it to that? That's in the cards. It's possible. But what I'm really excited about is the possibility of us moving to YouTube Live or Twitch and doing a live show online for folks who want to chime in and tell us their stories in the chat. And then, or if they want to be on the show, we'll get them into the Discord and have their voice on the voice channel. We'll have a direct discussion with each other. And we'll kind of replicate the live show that we did at Commander Sealed a little bit. So we can get some people chiming in with like, hey, was I the villain here? Here's my story. This is a pet peeve of mine. And put the focus more on the community. Not necessarily just like, hey, I got this cool creator calling in, but also you guys get a voice, which I think is a lot of fun. And that does open us up to having conversations with these other creators. Like, you know, Michael Allman might be able to sub in on a night and be my co-host for the Bullcast on these live shows. Or, you know, and if and when those live shows do happen, hopefully Morgan will be there in the role of a producer and also chiming in, and Solani might be a guest host as well. You know, we're not closing that door. We're just trying to make it a little bit easier scheduling wise and stuff. So I know that there's a lot of Games Freak heads out there who are going to miss Solani on the podcast. And to be honest, I miss him too. I do. But unfortunately, this is just the way it broke down so that we can accommodate some things a little bit easier and begin the transition to a different style and I guess medium. So thank you so much for listening, sticking with us. And as we come up on our anniversary, hopefully we'll have more to share about this new transition and new information. But for now, I think it's just time to tell people where to find us and we could scoot the day. Morgan, where can people find you? What do you want them to check out?
I'm still, for better or worse, on Twitter at Indigo Gentleman.
Nice. Easy peasy. Also, where should they message you if they want to write for Card Gamer?
So one of the things that will make this super easy, you can DM me on Twitter, but you can also go to spacecowmedia.com on our careers page. You can look at the full job listings for each of the writer positions that we have available, keeping in mind that they are contractual positions, so you will be getting paid per article.
Beautiful. And that makes it easy. Check my stuff out at commanderserral.com, my Am I the Bolus column, my Saw Pie Break kind of series that's a two-parter now. So check that out too. Check out my comedy, MikeCarrozza on Twitter and Instagram. We'll see if I'm still allowed on Twitter, considering the block thing might mean that Canada no longer is allowed to have Twitter. And so you can find me on Blue Sky too. Blue Sky, Instagram, Mike Carrozza, and follow us at Am I the Bullcast on Twitter as well. Hopefully you're going to be making the Blue Sky tonight or tomorrow. So follow us on there. Check us out on YouTube. And I think that's it. I think it's time to scoot the day, Morgan. Bye.
Consider the day scooted.
It's scooted.